have the great honor and the privilege to hear from Rabbi Shai Schefter, one of the pillars of our community. His father is with us on Kollel, if everyone remembers, as I'm sure you do. Hopefully we hear some words of Torah, and we have to thank Rabbi Schefter, of course, for opening the shul to us, to be here, to return this pleasure to be here learning, and Mitzvah Hashem, we should continue to do these things.
So good morning, everybody. Thank you so much. It's really, I feel terrible that I'm breaking up this beautiful Seder. There could be nothing more special than hearing the words of beautiful songs of Torah being sung in our shul. And Emir Tashem, you should all continue to grow. Mala, mala. I hope everyone had a meaningful summer, a summer filled with growth, a summer filled with inspiration. And because I don't know what everybody was particularly learning this summer, I tried to think of something that you probably have not learned this summer. And I hope that this will be something that will help inspire and propel all of us to move forward a little bit. So number one, thank you to all of you for coming. I hope you had a good breakfast this morning. And you should continue to enjoy and to learn and to grow together. So what I wanted to talk about this morning is, I'm sure for many of you, high school is something where we may not focus all the time. I'm just saying, some do, but may not be all the time something that we focus on. The ability and the opportunity where we have the privilege of observing mitzvahs. We're busy in high school thinking about lots of other things, and we have a lot to think about. We have a whole life ahead of us to think about. But yet, when we have the opportunity in the summertime to go on some of the programs that we do, much of our focus, especially for those who are on the all-learning programs this summer, how many here were in Ansi Svay Kollel? Is that everyone? Wow, okay. So all of you who were there on the program have really dedicated and focused yourselves to a experience of full immersion in Shmiras HaMitzvos and Torah learning. And the question is, where do we go from here? And I hope that that will inspire you to try to think more carefully as you move forward about how much of a priority this needs to be. And as a result of that, I just wanted to talk this morning briefly about this idea of when one observes a mitzvah, what exactly happens? What happens and how should we be excited for what it is that is going to come to us, for the mitzvahs that we observe. So we begin with an idea of the Rambam. I'm sure many of us have heard of the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah, 13 principles of faith that are found in the back of every siddur at the end of Shacharis. Those really were written by the Rambam. And if anyone's familiar with Yigdal, right, which we probably don't have so much time to say in the morning, but Yigdal actually is an abbreviation of the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah. It boils down in a poem format of all the different principles that the Rambam felt were so critical for every Jew to know. So much so that the Rambam says, a Jew who does not believe in the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah is considered to be a heretic, is considered to be an apikoros. So that's how far, that's how extreme he takes it. Now, this was not something that was taken by all the Rishonim. This was a very controversial statement that the Rambam made when he said there are Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah. How so? Number one, because the Ravid, for example, says, I don't agree with the 13 principles that the Rambam drew up. Number one, the Rambam says, somewhere along the way in the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah, anyone who believes that God has a body, anyone who believes that God has, you know, the same kind of format that any of us have, the Rambam says, is an apikoros. And the Ravid says, there were many great people before the Rambam and after him who felt that way. So the Rambam is saying that those Rishonim are apikorsim? How can you say that? So that's challenged theologically that the Ravid has with the Rambam's position. But outside of that, their Advaz, one of the other Rishonim, who was 250 years later, asked a much more fundamental question, and that is, how can you say that there's one part of Torah which is an Ikar? How can you say there are certain parts of Torah which are so important, which we need to emphasize? That means, what does that mean, by default? There are other parts that are not so important. So he says, how can you say such a thing? The Radvaz asks. You're going to call these the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah, the 13 most important principles of the Torah? What does that mean? What makes this more important than that? So like, Shabbos is not in the list. So how'd you leave that out? Shabbos is not important? Only something else is important? So that's the question of the Radvaz. Be it as it may, we understand that we have this idea of the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah. It's a concept that we're familiar with. And I'd like to take us to a Mishnah Meseches Avos, Perek Beis, Mishnah Aleph, where the Mishnah tells us as follows. Havizayir b'mitzvah kala kebachamura. Be mindful, be attentive, be vigilant of even a mitzvah kala. Now, what would you say is a mitzvah kala? Just give me an example. What's like an easy throwaway mitzvah, shall we say? Okay, I don't know. Is everyone nervous or nobody knows? Or there's, I don't know, it's not such a hard question. He knows, okay, that's here. You were just pointed to. You were nominated by the person next to you. Okay, doesn't even know what I'm talking about. So what is an easy mitzvah, I would say?
Baal Tosef.
Baal Tosef is an easy mitzvah? I don't think that's an easy mitzvah. Simple. Tzitzis. Right? Tzitzis is an easy mitzvah. They say about the Vilna Gaon, how much does a pair of tzitzis cost you if you're not wearing tcheles? How much does a pair of tzitzis cost you? What? $20, $15, something like that. You go to Israel, it's even less. Right? So $15, you can have the schus of wearing tzitzis every single day, and every time you walk in your tzitzis, everywhere you go, you're accruing schusim. That's a mitzvah kala. I don't even have to think about it. It's a simple thing to do. And the Vilna Gaon said before he died, he held his tzitzis and he was kissing them, and he said, he was crying, where he said, here you have such a simple mitzvah like tzitzis that just cost a few dollars in the store, and yet I get olam haba for this. I'm not going to have this opportunity, which is so basic to my life here in this world. I'm not going to have that schus. So the Mishnah says over here, Havi zahir b'mitzvah kala kivachamura. Everyone needs to be careful to pay attention even to the simplest of mitzvos. She'ein ata yodea matan schar shel mitzvos. You don't know what kind of schar you can possibly get from the simplest of mitzvos. So you think, oh, I'll wear my tzitzis today. I won't wear them. What's a big deal? The answer is, yes, it is a big deal. It's a big deal because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it. And who knows what kind of schar, what kind of reward will come from that. Which is why the Rambam writes in the Ani Mamans, look in Amar Beis, one of the most fundamental principles of Jewish life is Ani Mamin be'emunah shlema she'abori yisbarach shemo, gomel tov l'shomer mitzvosav. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bestow kindness and give good things to the people who follow His Torah and mitzvos. Schar va'onesh is such an indispensable part of Jewish life, so much so that the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim that there were seven concepts, seven things that predated the world, and one of them was Gan Eden v'Gehenim. What does that mean? You don't even have people in the world. Why did you create a Gan Eden? Why did you create a Gehenim? The answer is because without this concept of Gan Eden, how can you expect people to live life? I'm asking people to live life up to a certain standard. I'm asking them to live life living in a certain way, thinking a certain way, being a certain way. But I'm not going to reward them for that. So they're going to say at some point, this is ridiculous. I'm not interested. And therefore, it was so critical, it was so important that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow us to have that understanding even before we came to be, even before there were any human beings in the world. Gan Eden is something that had to be created first, because it's so much the foundation of what life is. To know that all that we're going toward, that all that we're working for, is going to be rewarded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the assumption of the Gemara is that Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleka. It's a Gemara Kiddushin, which means that we are not going to gain the reward for the mitzvahs that we do in this world. We assume that the schar that we get for all the mitzvahs that we do is going to be something that is given in Olam Haba. And you have to ask yourself, why? Imagine I have an employer. Imagine my employer tells me, you know what, I'm not going to send you a paycheck. Maybe in 50 years from now when you retire, I'm going to think about it. Maybe I'll pay you for all the years that you work for me. Am I going to possibly work for that person all those years? Of course not. Why not? Because I'm not being paid. And who knows if I will be paid. So why would I do such a thing? So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up a system where Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleka, if you want to encourage people to actually be engaged in the observance of mitzvos, why would He set up a system where we're not going to be paid here? Why not set up a system where we actually get the reward in our lifetime, and then that will propel us forward to do more? Good question. So that's a question that many of the Baalei Machshava ask. And the answer that they give is as follows, the Chida, and others write the same. And that is, when you talk about the reward for a mitzvah, the reward is something that is infinite. It can't possibly be paid back in a finite world. We live in a world where there's a limit to how much we can have, right? You talk about somebody who's rich. You talk about somebody who has a lot of pleasure. So how much pleasure can you possibly have in this world? It gets to a point where it's like, okay, you can't have anything more. Right? What's the most pleasurable thing you've ever done? Imagine you do it 1,000 times. Imagine you do it 1,000,000 times. It's not going to be pleasurable anymore. Imagine the best food you've ever eaten. At what point in your life is it going to become not a pleasure anymore? And therefore, when you're dealing with a finite world, you cannot be paid back something that is infinite. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up a system where Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Maleka, we don't have reward in this world because it is impossible to give reward in this world for what we do. The Chafetz Chaim actually has an interesting mashal to explain it. He says, imagine you have somebody who wins a lottery. And it's not just stama lottery. How much was the recent lottery? You were all in Israel, you missed it? $800 million, right? Nobody heard about this? Your parents didn't win? Can't believe it. $800 million lottery. So imagine somebody wins. He's all excited. He won the lottery. So he goes to the local ATM machine, puts his lottery ticket in, and he's wondering, you know, like, how come it's just saying that they have $20 bills? Like, I need $800 million. I won the lottery. He says, okay, there must be something wrong with the ATM. Goes into the teller in the bank. He says, okay, I just won $800 million. Do you think you could, can I cash this in? Teller says, I don't have $800 million here. What do you want from me? So he says, oh, this is just a small branch of the bank. I better go to the major part of the company. So he goes to the headquarters of Citibank, to the headquarters of Wells Fargo, and he says, okay, here I am. I have the ticket, $800 million. Can I cash it in? We don't have that kind of money here. I mean, we're a bank. We buy, we sell, we trade, we have different things, but $800 million, we don't keep it around in a bank. Certainly not in the ATM, nor in the small branch that we have in your community. We don't even have it here in the headquarters. You got to go to the Treasury of the United States. That's where you get it. Shows up in the Pentagon or wherever you need to go for such a thing. Pentagon's probably not the right place, but he goes to the right place, to the mint, and he says, $800 million. He says, oh, now we can take care of this. So the Chafetz Chaim says, that's what it means. If you're going to have a ticket that's worth $800 million and you're going to go to a small ATM machine or to a small branch of the bank or even to the big branch of the bank, they're not going to be able to cash it in for you. They're going to say, we respect and we celebrate and we're excited for what you have, but we can't help you. And that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at Schar Mitzvah as well. The Schar that we are all deserving of is something that cannot be cashed in finite terms. And that is why we generally assume Schar Mitzvah Bahai Al Malecha. The Mishnah in Perek Dalet and Pirkei Avos writes a fascinating comment, and I want to learn this together with you, a comment of the Michta Melio in explaining the Mishnah's statement. The Mishnah says, Yafa Shah Acha Shal Koras Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chai Ha'olam Hazeh. It's a Mishnah in the fourth Perek in Pirkei Avos that one moment in Olam Haba is greater than Olam Hazeh. Now what does that mean? Let's read together what it means. Rav Dessler writes as follows in the Michta Melio. Yafe Shah Achas means Chefzi Legalas Bazeh. I want to share with you Masha Zachisi Lishmoa Me Harav Brody, this that I heard from my teacher. Who Pir, she explained as follows. Ki Inyan Chai Olam Hazeh. What does it mean when it says that one moment in Olam Haba is greater than Kol Chai Olam Hazeh, than the entire experience of this world? He says as follows. Im Nikabe Tzal Toch Rega Echad Es Kol Hashos. Imagine if I was able to consolidate, to combine all the hours, Vigam Haragoyim Shel Osher Vinacha Shiyesh La'adam Mimeshach Kol Chayav. All the pleasure, all the gratification, all the joy, all the delight that I have, my entire life. So right now, you're only in high school, so you may not be able to have so many pleasurable moments that you've been through. But think about the pleasures that you had. You won the championship. You excelled in school. You're the valedictorian. You're doing really well. You're producing music. You're whatever you're doing, right? All kinds of different things. It's exciting. It's pleasurable. You get to the goal, and you're really excited about it. Now imagine throughout the course of your life, every pleasurable experience that you possibly could have all comes together and is consolidated into one experience. What do you think that would feel like? What do you think that would feel like? Imagine what that would feel like. It's something that we can't even imagine. And he writes, although that is something that is so beyond our imagination, let's go to the next paragraph. Achein zos v'gam acheres. Imagine if you took that experience and you added onto it kol ha'osher v'hanacha sheyesh la'anshei kol ha'ir b'meshech kol yimechayeyam. Imagine if I then took all of the pleasure and all of the joyous moments of every single person in my community and tacked it all into one experience and lived that experience. What do you think that would feel like? That would be like beyond. But it's still not enough. Mikol Chai Olam Hazeh, he says, means you have to take the pleasurable experiences of every human being that ever lived. Take every joyous moment that they had. Take every milestone that they were so blessed to live. Put all of those feelings together in one experience. And one moment in Olam Haba is greater than all of that. That's what it means. Yafa Shah Achas. In Olam Haba, Mikol chayei ha'olam hazeh. Not just from any experience you can have in this world. No, it means from accumulating all of olam hazeh, all the pleasures, everything a person can ever do and experience and enjoy in this world. You put that all together, and one moment in olam haba is still greater than all of that. What a powerful description of why we observe mitzvahs. Of how lucky we are. Just the simple act of wearing tzitzis every day. The simple act of davening. I hope through your time in Kollel you had an opportunity to focus a little bit more on the davening, to focus a little bit more on your learning, to think carefully about the different experiences and opportunities that we're given throughout our experience as Jews, and how lucky we are. Ashreinu matov chalkenu. But look what's waiting for us. Look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu describes is going to be the payback. Why is it that He can't pay us in this world? Because such a pleasure is unimaginable in this world. Such an experience is something that is so beyond anything that we could ever even fathom. So in the 1700s, the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, a very important sefer on Machshava. Anybody know how old the Ramchal was when he passed away? Huh?
40.
Can you imagine? 40 years old. Look what he accomplished. You have a whole lifetime ahead of you. But look what a person can accomplish when they're only 40 years old. Now, I'm almost 40, so I missed the boat. But I hope all of you will learn from my mistakes. Make the most of your lives. Look what you can accomplish. Look what you can do. It's astounding. You know who else died at 40? Anybody know? Rashi? Really? No, Rashi was 60. The Arizal. The Arizal. Can you imagine? The Arizal passed away at 40 years old, and look at the legend that he became. Look at the legacy he leaves over for all of us. So the Mesilas Yesharim writes that what is it that this world is all about? And he says, obviously, our experience in this world is to give us the opportunity to get through the distraction, to get through all of the complication, and to see that there's something much larger waiting for us at the other end. And that is so much of what he emphasizes. Look at the paragraph on the second side of the page. V'lo od ela. Shem tachlis b'riyas ha'adam hayelitzarach ha'olam hazeh. If the whole point of being here on this earth is just to get us to a place where we'll experience olam haba. I'm sorry, if it was only for olam hazeh, lo hayetzarach mipnei zeh, shetenufach bo neshama klal. Why do we have a sublime neshama? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? It would be much easier to live life on this earth without a neshama. Obviously, there's a much higher purpose. Obviously, there's a reason for all of this. And he says, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu make a neshama suffer by being together with us? Kol shekein hi, eino motza shum nachas ruach b'chol inugei zeh ha'olam. You think our neshama cares that we're going out to eat? You think our neshama cares that we're going on all these trips, that we're having a great time? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu make our neshama suffer through all this? And the answer is, obviously, he says, it's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to realize that there's something so much larger to think about. That there's a much larger context in what our experience on this earth is all about. Let's look at the next paragraph. Chen Amru Rabbeinu Zechonam Livracha Al Karchach Ata Notzer Val Karchach Ata Nolad Ein Haneshama Oheves Olam Hazeh Klal. Our neshama has no interest in being here. Our neshama is not excited. Ela Adarabba Moeses Bo Im Kein Vadai Lo Haya Borei Habori Yisbarach Bria Letachlishu Neged Chuka V'Nimas Mimena. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do something that is antithetical to what my neshama wants? Ela Briyaso Shaladan Lematzava Ba'olam Abahi. The conclusion has to be, says the Ramchal, that we must be here for something larger. It must be that we're here because there is something beyond our experience of Olam Hazeh. If not, what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so mean, Kaviyachal? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so unfair? He just wants to make a neshama suffer just because he wants to? That can't be. That's impossible. And therefore he says it must be that obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu has something much greater in store for all of us. Nimtzana lemeidim, look at the last paragraph. Ki ikar mitzias ha'adam olam hazeh hu rak l'kayim mitzvahs v'lamud b'nisayon. V'hanas ha'olam ein roi sheyielo ela le'ezer l'siyua b'lvad. All of these hurdles that are thrown in our way, and yes, it's challenging. And we saw this summer that we learned Torah. But we had very little distraction. And what happens during the year when we have so much more distraction? And we're back into the routine of things? How many here go to night seder at least one night a week during the year? So I'm curious. Why isn't every person's hand up? You all went to night seder over the summer. You see that it's doable. You see that it's possible. You see that you can do it. So you'll say, well, I didn't have schoolwork in the summer. I didn't have my varsity team. And I wasn't busy with lots of other things. But the answer is, you see, Night Seder is something you can do. Night Seder is a possibility in your world also. Is it going to be able to be done every night? Maybe not. Maybe you're too busy, and that's okay. I don't get to learn Night Seder every night. I'm also running around and taking care of things that I need to do. But we all have the opportunity to think bigger, to expand our vision of what we want to accomplish for ourselves in the coming year. And after we spend a summer like this, it's really an opportunity to do just that, to realize that all that we've accomplished and all that we've done is something that is not just limited to a summer. It's something that we can take with us because this is what life is about. And yes, are there going to be impediments along the way? Of course there will be. And will our friends make fun of us that you're the loser going to Night Seder? Yes, I'm sure they will. And will our parents sometimes maybe say, you know, I'm not sure, maybe we should restructure? Okay, so talk to your parents, be respectful, and understand your parents want the best for you also. The best for you is that you should grow as much as you can and take advantage of the opportunity that all of us are given. You just spent an uplifting summer really proving to yourselves that you have the opportunity to be larger than you thought you could be. And we have to propel ourselves forward as we go through the experience of the year and realize that this is a realistic possibility for all of us as well. The Chafetz Chaim writes that often we have a mistaken impression. We say to ourselves, what do we really think we're going to be able to contribute? You read stories about what life once was. You read stories about great people, great tzaddikim, great gedolim, great leaders. People who lived on a different stratosphere than we live. People who lived a very different experience than any of us are living. And you say to yourself, am I going to make a significant contribution to the world when, after all, I'm just me? And it's an interesting question. Right, you think about the fact that we believe that we're going to bring Mashiach, right? We talk about it all the time. Anyone here ever thought of the following question? If the Rambam couldn't bring Mashiach, Shai Shechter is going to bring Mashiach? Am I the Rambam? I mean, if Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam and the Raivin and all the great tzaddikim in the days of the Rishonim and Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Rama and the Minchas Chinuch and Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Chassam Sofer and everybody else in between and after couldn't bring Mashiach. So what, I'm going to bring Mashiach? So what do we mean? Sometimes it's disheartening when we think about our observance of mitzvahs and you say to yourself, I'm just me. What am I going to do already? What am I going to contribute? How can I really change the landscape of the Jewish people? And that is a very important question that we need to ask ourselves and we need to think about. So in truth, number one, let me read you a passage from the Arizal. Now it happens to be the Arizal, as we mentioned, was only 40 years old when he passed away, but he left us a treasure trove of everything that the Arizal represents, but the Arizal wrote very, very little. If not, I don't know if he wrote anything. I think most of what we have from the Arizal is from Reb Chaim Vital, which is one of his star Talmidim. So Reb Chaim Vital, listen what he writes in the name of his Rebbe the Arizal. I'm going to read you his words. Sha'alti lemori. I asked my Rebbe the Arizal. Mori, he was my teacher. Echaya omer shenafshi lemalo kolkach kinizkar b'shalak gugulim. How can he tell me that I have such an elevated neshama? The simplest Jew in the days of the Rishonim was greater than the greatest Talmud Chacham today. Now that's an exaggeration. And obviously he's just trying to emphasize the point, but he says, you're telling me, the Arizal, that I have such a holy neshama, that I'm able to make such major contributions? I'm nothing near what life used to be like. I have my cell phone, I'm watching movies, I'm doing my things, I'm busy. You think I'm anywhere near what life used to be in the days of the Rishonim? Even in the days of the Arizal? So he asked his Rebbe, what does this mean? And his Rebbe told him the following. V'yomar da. And he said, his Rebbe told him the following. Ki gedulas ha-nefesh eina tluya kefi maisa ha-adam, ra kefi hazman v'hador ha-hu. So much is dependent on when we live. Maise katan bedar hazeh, listen carefully. Maise katan bedar hazeh, says the Arizal, and this is in the 1500s. A small positive action, a small positive contribution in this generation, shakol kekama mitzvahs bedaras harishonim, is equal, is similar to the greatest acts in the days of the Rishon, in the days of those who came before us. And writes the Arizal, so often we need to look not at what exactly we're doing or not doing, but at the challenge that's around us, at the circumstances in which we live, at all the confusion that our world represents today, at all the difficulty that we have to overcome to be good Jews in today's world. It's not simple. You look at a world where there's no truth anymore. There's no objective truth. Everything is subjectivity. All the morals and principles are subject to change because the society continues to decide what's right and what's wrong, what's moral, what's immoral, what's proper and what's improper. There's no objective truth anymore. We follow a Torah and mitzvahs that has been consistent from the time that it was given. It hasn't changed, it's immutable. But it's hard to uphold that kind of standard in today's world. It's hard to be a proud Jew when we look around and we see that nobody around us feels that it's good to be Jewish. It's hard to be a proud Jew who supports everything that Eretz Yisrael represents for us in our world, when after all, the anti-Israel bias around the world is so strong and so powerful. So how am I going to stand up to that? What am I going to do? What am I going to contribute? This is an amazing medrash in this past week's parsha. The medrash tells us in Parshas Va'eschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu offers 515 tefillos to get himself into Eretz Yisrael. How do we know it was 515? It's the gematria of Va'eschanan. So the Gemara says, Va'eschanan is the gematria of 515, and that is the amount of tefillos that Moshe Rabbeinu offered to get into Eretz Yisrael. Now, what exactly he said in each of those tefillos, we don't know. But the Medrash gives us a small glimpse into some of the communication that took place between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu asked the following question. You ready? Moshe Rabbeinu asks, Mipnei ma, why is it, Atzmosov shal Yosef nechnasim la'aretz, the bones of Yosef were taken out of Mitzrayim and brought all the way through the journey in the desert. Now we're about to go into Eretz Yisrael and we're going to bring the bones of Yosef in with us. Va'ani, and I, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eini nichnas la'aretz, I don't have a right to go into the land. Am I less than Yosef? I mean, Yosef was great. Yosef was amazing. But I'm Moshe Rabbeinu. You're telling me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm less than Moshe Rabbeinu? How can that be? HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers him the following. Mi shehode ba'artzo, nikvar ba'artzo. Somebody who's proud of his connection, of his affiliation, of his bond with the Jewish people and with the land of Eretz Yisrael has a right to go into the land. Someone who's embarrassed, someone who's ashamed of his connection to the land of Eretz Yisrael, doesn't have a right to go in. Now ask the Medrash, where do you ever find such a thing? Moshe Rabbeinu is ashamed of his connection to Eretz Yisrael. What are you talking about? So the Medrash goes further and says, Yosef, as we know, is snatched away from his family. He's sent down into slavery. He ends up in Mitzrayim. Who buys him as a slave? Potiphar. Potiphar comes home to his wife one day. He says, look, so excited. I have somebody now who's going to be the slave in the house. He's going to help us out. Yosef right away says, Ganov gunavti me'eretz ha'evrim. Let me just tell you who I am. I'm going to explain to you what my essence is. Ganov gunavti me'eretz ha'evrim. I was taken from the land of the Jews. I'm a part of the Jewish people. This is what I stand for. It's what I represent. It's who I am. Let me just make it clear to all of you. This is my essence. I am a Jew, I'm connected to the land of the Jews, and I'm proud of it. And I have nothing to be ashamed of. That's Yosef. Contrast that with Moshe Rabbeinu. As we know, Moshe Rabbeinu is a fugitive, he's running for his life, he ends up in Midian. And at that time, the daughters of Yisro are by the well, they're being abused. Moshe Rabbeinu sees what's going on, he helps them out, they come home early that day. Yisro asks them, why are you home so early today? What happened? They said, well, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haroim. There was an Egyptian man who happened to be at the well today. He helped us out. And that's why we got home a little bit earlier than usual. Now, writes the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu hears that somebody refers to him as an Ish Mitzri? Somebody just called you an Egyptian? V'hu shomea v'shosek? Moshe Rabbeinu, how's your blood not boiling? Somebody mistakenly thought you were an Egyptian? You didn't jump out of your skin and correct them and say, no, you got it wrong. I'm a Jew. I'm from the land of the Jewish people. That's what I am. I'm not an Ish Mitzri. You're embarrassed of being a part of the Jewish people? V'hu shomea v'shosek? Eino nichnas la'aretz. Now what we learn from that medrash is, it's our job to live as proud Jews. It's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of all of us, but it's so difficult. when you go out into the world and you see that the principles that we uphold, that the values of life that we stand for, are so different and so antithetical to everything that the world stands for and believes in today, it's becoming a greater and greater challenge as the years go on. But writes the Arizal, living in a community like ours, living at a time and place in history like we do, experiencing Galus the way we do, and living amongst the Ummah Sa'olam as we do, and yet overcoming even small challenges, contributing just a little bit. Maybe you take upon yourself, you learn a Mishnah a day, you learn a something a day, a Halacha a day, you'll do Shnayim Mikra going forward, something. But doing the smallest thing, says the Arizal, is something. That Maisa Katan Bedar Hazeh is Shakul Kekama Mitzvahs Bedaris HaRishonim. Am I going to turn out to be Rabbi Kiva Eger? No, I won't. Am I going to be the Chasam Sofer or Rabbi Yosef Karo? I will not be. But that's not what I'm supposed to be. My job in this world, in this experience, in this challenging climate that we live in, is to be able to figure out how to do small things, but that will make major contributions. And in some way that's greater than some of the greatest things that were done in earlier generations. Let me just close with one final mashal of the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim writes, it was a community where they had a stream of water where everybody used to come and be able to get water that they needed for their homes. Now obviously there had to be someone who was designated to be in charge of this water opportunity, otherwise it would get out of hand. So the Moshel HaYir, the governor, takes a simpleton from town and he says, you know, we're going to give you a job, you're going to be in charge of the reservoir, you're going to be in charge of the water, and anybody who wants water is going to come to you, you'll figure out a system of how this is going to work. Okay, it's going very well, everyone's very happy, everything's fine. One fine day, the governor decides, it's time for me to come down and see what's going on there, make sure everything's running smoothly. So he comes, checks it out, he says, you know, if you don't mind, I'd love a cup of coffee. So he says, sure, I'm happy to make you a cup of coffee. Goes and gets a cup of water, goes into his house, heats it up for him, puts the coffee in, puts some sugar, mixes it all up, goes back to the governor, he says, here's your cup of coffee, look, I prepared it from the beginning through the end, I made it fresh for you, beautiful. Takes one sip, he spits it out, he says, this is disgusting. What do you mean it's disgusting? I have fresh coffee, what's wrong? He says, the water has dirt in it. The water has pebbles and rocks in it. So he says, well, you told me to be in charge of the reservoir. What should I do? This is the water that comes out. It's dirty water. It comes through all the mountains until it gets here. What am I supposed to do? He says, no, you don't understand. When someone needs to take water, you have to sift it out for them. And after you sift it out, then it's going to be purified water. And then you can drink it as a coffee. He says, okay, thank you for letting me know. I nobody ever told me that. This is news to me. From then on, every time someone comes for water, before he gives it to them, he sifts it through, gives it over to them, and they have whatever they need. A couple of weeks later, a big fire breaks out in town in the middle of the night, and everyone in town is out in the town square trying to figure out how we're going to put out the fire. The whole city is going to burn down. This man says, well, we know if you take water and you pour it on the fire goes out. So yeah, of course. So everybody come down to the well, let's all take a bucket of water, and by our collective efforts, by everybody taking water together, after enough buckets of water go into the fire, it's going to go out. All right, everybody rushes down to the well. They all say, okay, we're going to go get the water. And he's there managing it. Not a single bucket comes out. They say, we're waiting 10 minutes already. What's going on? He says, well, I have to sift the water first. The governor told me, before you give out water, you got to sift it through. So that's what I'm doing. And they start yelling at him, you fool! You sift out water when you need to drink a cup of coffee. But when there's a fire that's raging outside and you need to put it out, it doesn't matter what kind of water you have. It doesn't matter how diluted, how contaminated it is, how much dirt and rocks there is in the water. You just put it out. You're worrying about silly things when you need to worry about the much bigger picture. There's a raging fire out there. Says the Chafetz Chaim, you look around the world, the state of the Jewish people today, not the state of Israel, but the state of Jewish life today. You may not realize it because we live in an insular community here, but there's a raging fire out there. The intermarriage rate in the United States is skyrocketing. There's a lot of work to be done for those of us who are sticking to the faith, for those of us who are committed to what it means to live life as a Jew who is connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Says the Chafetz Chaim, there's a raging fire out there. You're going to be worried about sifting through the water. You're going to be worried that my Shmiras HaMitzvahs is not perfect. It's not the way Rabbi Yosef Karo shook Lulav. It's not the way he wore his tzitzis, and it's not the way that all of them had kavana when they davened. The fact that you're getting up in the morning and going to shul in the first place is tremendous. There's a raging fire out there. So are you going to be able to have kavana for every word in the siddur that you say? Maybe not. You have some rocks in your water. It's okay. There's a raging fire. Put it out. We all have that obligation. We all have that sense of responsibility. We all have to realize, like the Arizal said, we're living in a generation where every small thing that we do is significant. Why is it significant? Because the alternative is, look what's going on in the world. The alternative is so much less. And writes the Chafetz Chaim, we should all be encouraged, we should all have the stamina and the fortitude and the strength to realize in ourselves that we do have the ability to put out fires, that we do have the ability to make major contributions. Not to worry about the minutia, not to worry about whether or not we're doing it perfectly. Is it perfect the way it should be or not? We have the opportunity to realize that our contributions really matter. After you all spent a summer inspiring yourselves, and I can say inspiring all of us, when I came to Kollel for one day this summer, I was so inspired. I was not in Kollel probably in 10 or 15 years. I haven't been there. But how amazing to see, it was not like that in my days, how amazing to see hundreds and hundreds of young men who have dedicated their summer toward a life of Limud HaTorah, who have dedicated their summer toward a understanding of tefillah, of Shmiras HaMitzvos, of what it means to be a committed Jew in our climate, in our generation. Just the mere fact that you made a decision to go on that program is something that should be celebrated. Whether or not you did anything else, the fact that you chose to dedicate yourself this summer to such a noble cause is reason for you to be celebrating in and of itself. On top of all of that, what you may have learned and what you grew and what you gained from that extremely meaningful experience, it's our hope, it's our tefillah, that everyone have the opportunity to use this summer as a way to propel themselves forward, as a way to realize that, yes, you can. Yes, you do have the ability to accomplish great things, to make great contributions to the Jewish community, and we look forward to celebrating all of those great life experiences together with all of you. I wish everyone a wonderful day.